Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Thank you. Hello and good afternoon and welcome to the virtual meeting of the U.S. Core Data for Interoperability Task Force. This is the first of many meetings. I am Lauren Ritchie, the designated federal officer. I will call the meeting to order and start with the official roll call. Christina Caraballo.
Present.
Terry O'Malley.
Here.
Brett Oliver.
Here.
Clem McDonald.
Here.
Ken Kawamoto.
Here.
Stephen Lane.
Good afternoon.
Hello, Valerie Gray. I believe she's absent. Dan Vreeman. Do we have Dan on the line? Eric Heflin.
Present.
Hello. Kim Nolan. Do we have Kim on the line? Laura Herman Langford.
Here.
Leslie Kelly Hall.
Good afternoon.
Hello. Mike Peretta.
Good afternoon.
Nancy Bevan.
Present.
Rich Elmore.
Here.
Rob Hefsey.
Here.
Okay. Thank you all. And with that, I will introduce and turn it over to the task force co-chairs, Christina Caraballo and Terry O'Malley.
Great. Thanks, Lauren. And welcome, everyone, and thank you all so much for agreeing to be part of this endeavor. We're going to have a quick sprint over the next couple of months, but it should be engaging and fun. At least that's what we hope it will be. So what I'd like to do next is, if we can have the next slide, kind of go through the list of who we are. So is the slide advanced, folks? I can't tell.
Yes, it's advanced.
Okay. So great. So this is a list of who we are. And what I thought we could do is spend a few minutes just running down the list. And so each of us can take 30 to 45 seconds to give a blurb on sort of where you're from, what you do, and why you're on this committee. That sounds fair. So I think Christina, perhaps we'll start with you, and then I'll follow.
Sounds great. Welcome, everyone. Just echoing Terry's excitement to have everybody here today. I'm Christina Caraballo. I'm from a company called Get Real Health. We specialize in consumer engagement. I'm located in Washington, D.C., and I would really consider myself an advocate for everything that we're working on to increase the adoption of health IT, interoperability, and access to health information. So, Terry, I'll pass it back to you.
Okay, and I'm an internist and geriatrician. Take care of a bunch of very complex, frail, elderly people. And my interest in this is in transitions of care and longitudinal coordination of care, and interoperability just becomes the key pillar to that. Let me pass it on to Brett.
Hey, good afternoon. Brett Oliver, I'm a family physician by trade, still practice one day a week, but I'm also the Chief Medical Information Officer for Baptist Health, which is in Kentucky and Southern Indiana. We're an Epic shop, and my interest is with the provider end of things, making sure that with all this interoperability, which is wonderful, that we present data in workflows and that's important to the clinician and not just more stuff to wade through.
Right.
Are we going in the order of the list?
Yes, we are, Clem. You're up.
Okay. So I'm Clem McDonald. Excuse me. I'm from the National Library of Medicine, NIH, but spent decades working with medical record systems and physicians, and they ended up being happy in that environment. And I go along with Brett about we want to make it work at least for physicians. It should work for everybody. And I'd like to see the fact that it really gets across the different systems successfully. I don't think we're there yet.
Okay, I'll go next. This is Ken Kamoto. I'm an associate CMIO at University of Utah Health. I've been actively engaged in standards, and we are implementing a variety of things like Smart On Fire apps, CDS Hook services for production purposes. And I'd like to provide some pragmatic boots on the ground perspective along with our my colleagues here to help make these standards better and more usable.
And I'm Stephen Lane, continuing with the pragmatic approach. I'm a practicing primary care family physician and clinical informaticist at Sutter Health out on the West Coast. We at Sutter have been early adopters of a number of interoperability solutions, including the Epic Supported Care Everywhere Network, eHealth Exchange, Care Quality, Direct Secure Messaging, and now Firebase apps. So we bring a lot of practical experience to this discussion. I also help to lead a regional collaborative in California of organizations on multiple vendor systems that are really trying to not only share this data, but really make full use of it, both at the point of care and for analytics.
Great. Valerie? Hey,
Valerie. Is Valerie on the line yet? Didn't hear it earlier.
Okay.
Dan? I don't believe Dan has joined us either. Eric?
Well, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for the, really, frankly, the honor of being involved with this task force. So I'm Eric Heflin. I'm the CTO and CIO of the Sequoia Project, and I also have the second role of being the Chief Technology Officer and CISO of the statewide health information exchange for the Texas Health Services Authority. So both organizations are nonprofits organized to really, for the public good, to lessen the burden of health information exchange and facilitate that. I'm a software engineer, computer scientist, architect, been involved with the nationwide interoperability health scope projects really since the inception of the nationwide health information network about 10, 11, 12 years ago, and then really been involved from that point forward as really my real career focus. Also have interest in interoperability, broad-scale interoperability, security, privacy, supporting patient access through expressions of patient privacy preferences, and again, very very much looking forward to our task force.
Okay, has Kim Nolan joined us? Okay, we'll move on to Laura.
Hi, thank you. I'm Laura Heerman Langford, and I'm really from Intermountain Healthcare, not Indiana University. So I work with Intermountain Healthcare as a nurse informaticist. I also am the Chief Operating Officer for HSPC, the Healthcare Services Platform Consortium. And I have a lot of history looking at nursing data, nursing standardization of the data and information exchange, and also interoperability through IHE and HL7, et cetera.
Leslie?
Hi, I'm Leslie Kelly Hall, and I'm the Consulting Executive for Policy for HealthWise, a nonprofit committed to helping people make better health decisions. I am a former Chief Information Officer and Chief Marketing Officer of a health system in Idaho, a former member of the Health Information Technology Standards Committee, have worked on patient-generated health data, and I'm a member of the Direct Trust Board of Directors and the Care Quality Steering Committee, and I advocate for patients' rights in health information technology, and I'm very thrilled to be part of this. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Hi, everybody. This is Michael Peretta. I'm the founder of DocAtDocCare. It's a patient engagement and appointment onboarding application that leverages some newer technologies such as HL7 Fire. I've been involved with ONC over the past 2 years or so as part of their Move Health Data Forward Challenge, and have been involved heavily in implementing their health relationship trust or HART specifications. I'm based in New York City, and I'm very excited to be part of this task force. Thank you.
Thank you. Nancy?
Hi, I'm Nancy Bevan, and I work in Louisville, Kentucky for Humana. I'm the strategic interoperability leader for Humana and really help direct Humana's strategy for interoperability through for medical records and clinical data, bidirectional data between payer, provider, and patient. Very passionate about interoperability on the national level and nation scale. I'm on the steering committee for care equality and on the board of directors for the Sequoia Project. I've got about 20 years experience with EMRs and sharing information at the patient and provider level. So very excited about bringing the payer perspective to our task force.
Thank you. Rich?
Hi, Rich Elmore. I'm Senior Vice President for Corporate Development and Strategy at Allscripts. You know, a lot of my focus is on what we can do better for patients and for clinicians. Former member of the Health IT Standards Committee, and really looking forward to working with all of you. It's a great group. Thank you.
Thank you. And Rob?
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Rob Havasi. I'm a senior director at HIMSS in our Health Information Systems Group, focusing on connected health, long-term post-acute care coordination issues. I was till very recently the executive director of Continua and spent many years on the board of directors of Continua working on interoperability for patient-generated health data. And prior to that, spent about almost 10 years at Partners Healthcare on various IT roles and integrating various data streams. And it's an honor to be here with you all. Thank you.
Thank you. I will turn it back over to the task force co-chairs.
I think we can go ahead and move on to the next slide. So it sounds like we've got a really lively group here. I'm really excited to work with all of you, and I'm hearing this echo of how do we make standards better, more usable, and make interoperability work. So that kind of brings us to our charge here on this task force. I want to say overarching, we are really trying to look at laying a more of a foundation and a framework to better promote how we prioritize data sets and how we get and generate more stakeholder involvement and use of data. So with that, I'm going to go into our specific recommendations. Our overarching charge is to review and provide feedback on the US CDI structure and process. And we have four specific things we will be looking to provide recommendations to the Health IT Advisory Committee at the end of our 8-week sprint. So the first is mechanisms and approaches to receive stakeholder feedback regarding data class priorities. Second, the proposed categories to which data classes would be promoted and objective characteristics for promotion. The third is how the US CDI would be expanded and by how much. And fourth, any factors associated with the frequency with which it would be published. That we can go to our next slide. Another thing I wanted to say right off is that we are really going to, in this work, try to stay very focused on creating this template, this structure and framework as we continue to move forward. And our goal is not to get into the weeds at this stage of what is in the data classes specifically. That said, it is important, and if we have time at the end of this, we can start diving into that, but I want us to really stay focused. So first of all, we think it's really important to define what industry means. So who are these stakeholders we're talking about? Traditionally, when we've looked at technology and interoperability, we've thought of the use cases surrounding hospitals, providers, and EHRs. And we've really grown as an industry to recognize that there's a whole ecosystem of out there that can really benefit from interoperability working. So in the draft US CDI published by ONC on January 5th, which was in your reading materials, and we hope we're going to assume that everybody's read that document. But in that document, there were some a variety of use cases and target populations that ONC did identify. That does not mean that this is what all of them, but it is a first step. These included behavioral health, long-term and post-acute care, individual access, public health, emergency medical services, pediatrics, social determinants of health, transitions of care, provider directory services, and clinical quality measures. So with that, I'm going to pause for a moment and see if Terry would like to add anything at this stage.
Sure. Thanks, Christina. So, you know, I think the two immediate jobs for the task force are to figure out what the boundaries of the universe of engaged stakeholders should be, and how far out are we going to get? And that's sort of how inclusive should our process be for finding nominees for data classes? That's sort of our first job. Who should we be asking? And our second task then is developing a set of prioritization criteria that we can apply to any proposed data class from any proposed stakeholder, and a process that will be transparent, reliable, clear to everyone, and reproducible. And those, I think, are going to consume our early efforts. So our first job is to figure out which stakeholders we want to include at the table for nominating data classes. And then secondly, once we have a data class, how do we rank it against the other data classes that are seeking to be advanced through this process? Go ahead, Christina.
I think we're ready to move on to the next slide, right?
Well, is there a chance for questions?
Of course, there's. Do you want to just go through the next slide? One last slide?
Yeah, and we're definitely going to open this up, and we wanted to get started if we get through just kind of our general overview of what we're doing, open it up for definite discussion. So we have here our work plan, really looking at just briefly that if you map it to our original charges, the four, we're really looking at the first two items over the course of the next of 4 to 6 weeks, and then moving into the second two. Two dates I want to point out are March 21st, where we'll be providing our draft recommendations to the HITECH committee, and then April 18th is when we should have all of our final recommendations ready to present to the HITECH committee. So with that, I guess we can go ahead and open it up to questions. I don't think we have any more slides to go over.
Well, I don't know if I'm the first up on the list or not.
Go for it, Clem.
Okay. So, I mean, I found that I think there's some blending of houses and airplanes. So you talk about first you want to decide who are the stakeholders, and you list a stakeholder as social determinants of health. That's not a stakeholder. That's a class. So I think we got to clean it up a little bit. And then the other part about it is I can see different stakeholders wanting to put up different things. That's it. Just that we seem like you've mixed a couple of different kinds of entities. If we're talking about stakeholders, it shouldn't be classes. of data.
Yeah, and to clarify, it was kind of like broad things that we're thinking about. So the bundle I gave were the classes that spanned a wide variety of use cases and target populations. So it was kind of a blend. So good clarity on that.
You defined it as stakeholders. So I'm still confused when you initiated the discussion.
Right. So there is a blending there, Clem. But I think one of the ways to think about this are sort of what sort of domains or identifiable stakeholders should we be looking at to find candidate data classes? And if you think, so one of the ways to sort of categorize those domains might be, you know, in the types of care. You know, is it medical or surgical or nursing or behavioral or therapies or dental?
I get that. But okay. If you put in social determinants, those are variables.
I understand. But the
radiology reports would be a competitor with that.
Fine. No. Understood. And then you might also look at sort of some foundational care processes, you know, transitions of care, longitudinal care planning,
yeah,
patient individual identification, right? And then maybe big processes like public health and regulation and payment and quality. And then there are a bunch of sort of non-traditional healthcare providers that are way out on the edges, like schools and criminal justice system. So, if we think broadly about who might be interested in proposing data classes for consideration under this project, I think our first job is to figure out what that universe looks like. And the second job, which I agree, Clem, is to clean up what we mean by data classes and develop the prioritization process.
This is very helpful. I have a comment if now's a good time.
Sure. Please.
So I really do agree, I think, with the intent of the prior discussion. I would think I would reword it, though, again, not disagreeing, but just trying to clarify further, that as a software engineer, I never know if something I create is adequate or not unless judged by the expected outcome. And how I typically think that should be judged is in terms of use cases. And so what I would respectfully suggest we consider doing as part of the process portion of our charge would be to inject use cases as part of the discussion, because among other things, what that will give us is a way to ascertain whether or not a given data class, in fact, can meet the needs of a specified use case. And the reason really is, otherwise, in the absence of some type of a use case driving the data classes, it's going to be very hard, if not impossible, to judge whether or not we're done, we've got it right, or we've got gaps, or we've missed the mark entirely.
Hi, this is Leslie, and I have another question as well, or perhaps suggestion. And I'm looking for what are the real principles of the, not just the use cases, but the principles of this process. What are our guiding principles? Are we looking at things that are easily adoptable? I heard earlier in the workflow, use case specific with outcomes generated. Are we looking for a process that would indicate how it addresses a certain percentage of stakeholders versus two or three? Are all of those things up for grabs as we define the process for expanding these candidates of data?
Yep. I'll take a stab at that, starting with Eric, I think it isn't really important that, a very good point, to have the use cases defined. And as we look at building out our recommendations and this framework, it would probably be extremely instrumental to add an area where we clearly map the use cases to the different data classes and incorporate that in even maybe the chart that is in the USCDI so that it is more clear. So I would say that that's an excellent point. And then...
This is great. Thank you for that feedback. Appreciate it.
And just a quick point of preface, just a reminder, this is Lauren again. For the task force members, to please use the hand raise function if you have a comment or question. I see a hand has been raised. I just wanted to acknowledge that.
Good reminder. Thank you, Lauren.
Sure.
So everyone use the little icon way at the top with the hand up if you want to get in the queue to make a comment.
So I think I see Stephen Lane up with a hand up. Stephen.
You know, I was trying to be good since I got my hand slapped for not raising my hand in the last meeting. So got to figure out how we play by these rules. So I'm very excited with the idea of starting with the stakeholders. I guess I'm curious, what's our plan? Are we going to use the next 29 minutes to start to do some of this work? I mean, I've been jotting down kind of stakeholders, and you mentioned, Terry, types of care. I mean, there's a lot here. Are we going to roll up our sleeves and do the work here, or are we going to go home and work on some documents and send them around in between meetings? I'm just curious how we're going to start moving.
The answer is yes. If we're going to do both. So I think we can have some more general discussion for a few more minutes just to make sure we get most of the big issues or some of the big issues out. And then after that, we can dive into thinking about, what the universe is. And then between meetings, we'll Adam and Stacy, the support team for this endeavor, will put together homework, and we'll hope to get more feedback from you in time to present it at the next meeting and get it out to people before the meeting so it can be reviewed and we can go from there.
If I can just continue my comment a little bit, I know that we have received some specific public comment on the USCDI portion of the draft documents that were released. I trust that the committee as a whole will have a chance to review those. I submitted some USCDI comments. I've sent the task force chairs, some email with some other thoughts coming out of groups that I've been working on, and then people have been sending me emails. So I want to make sure we also know how best to channel input that we either have as individuals or we've received as members of the task force into the process for everyone's consideration.
This is Christina, and friendly reminder to everyone to state your name as well. But we actually have asked ONC Leads to get us those comments if possible. We're not sure if we're going to be able to get them or not. And we are also trying to see if we can get a list of the different stakeholders who have submitted comments in the hope that we can identify the types of groups that are commenting, as well as those that we have identified as could potentially benefiting from the USCDI, but are not commenting, so we can kind of better understand the group that we're looking at.
That's a great request. It's a great point. Go ahead, Christina, sir.
Nope. I think I'm good. I think we have Rich was next on comments.
Hi, Rich Elmore. I've read the document, the USCDI document. It wasn't clear to me what the levers are that kind of make it possible for this to achieve, nationwide scale and adoption. So I don't know if you had any insight into that. I think it's important for us to understand because I think this group should be thinking in part about feasibility and about, you know, kind of deployment implications of whatever process recommendations are being made. So, for example, if, you know, depending on who you talk to, let's say it's 5 to 8 years to get from, you know, the initial discussions about a standard to the time it's deployed in clinical sites and available for real interoperability. And so, you know, the idea of doing annual updates, I think, needs some consideration, that part of the process, given that kind of cycle time. And secondly, I mean, I just want to make sure we understand how what are the levers that are going to be used to make this real?
Hi, this is Terry. Again, another great question, a great point. The implication in the USCDI draft document is that recommendations that come forth out of this process regarding data classes be looked upon as sort of ONC's policy statement that these are going to be important and promoted. I'm not quite sure that gets exactly to your levers because I don't know what the real levers are behind that.
No, it doesn't. So I'm looking at that statement right now, and that's part of what's raising the question. So, you know, with other rounds of standards, there was, you know, regulatory foundation for ensuring that EHRs were certified and you know, could support a common clinical data set. What are the mechanisms that are going to be used to ensure that this gets broadly deployed and broadly adopted so that it can be used for nationwide scale for exchange? What is the intention?
This is Christina. I think you've hit a key point that we're trying to, or a problem we're trying to solve, and I think it's up to this task force to kind of provide recommendations on how we do that. Even with our first bullet, which is the mechanisms and approaches to receive stakeholder feedback regarding the data classes and elements, it's like, how do we generate people to actually, and different stakeholders to actually be interested in the USCDI and start commenting and become more involved. So I think that definitely plays into an area that we need to start looking at.
Yeah, I mean, it may be that, you know, Steve Posnack or someone in ONC can give us more specific guidance on this, but I would think we'd want to understand the answers to those questions before we get into, you know, specific areas of what we're going to make recommendations on data. So, or should it be part of the charge of this group to come back with recommendations on that, those broader process and regulatory questions? I would be surprised if it were.
Yeah, this is Terry. Yeah, I'd be surprised too. I don't think that's quite within the scope of our committee, but it's a critical issue, and I think Steve is a very good person to give us the first draft of the answer, and we will chase that down. But thank you for that point.
So who's watching the hand?
I think we have Michael up next.
Hey, everybody. Mike Peretta here. Hi. This is just a quick practical question. Is the plan here to set up some sort of shared or living document, such as not like a Google Doc, but maybe using ONC's Jira board or something, so that when we're all going off in our own directions, and collaborating on this. We're not duplicating each other's efforts, and we can all kind of stay in sync in a way.
So this is Lauren from ONC. We actually had a similar question with the Trusted Exchange Framework Task Force on yesterday, and we're looking into what potential online collaborative tools we can use for the task force, something that both we can use on the ONC side as well as the member side.
Oh, thanks. Okay, yeah. If I may recommend any, Trello has worked very well for me in the past, but I think any sort of shared document would be tremendously helpful.
Okay, thanks for the recommendation.
Great. Clem, I see you next with the hand up.
Yeah, well, it's back to the stakeholders. So I can see that stakeholders are good people to list, so you can make sure these are the people who should be suggesting things. But in some sense, I don't understand what differences it make. If we can get the data to go to anybody, we can get it to go to everybody, almost. So unless we're talking about new data that doesn't exist anywhere, like requiring more additional data. So I'd like at least to have that distinction, because are we really going to encourage people to say the hospital systems, physicians, nurses have to enter more data so that these additional requirements can be met? Are we saying we want to facilitate the data that exists and make sure it's standardized enough to send?
Yeah, Clem, this is Terry. A good point, but I think that will be a process that we work through when we figure out the prioritization schema. Because you can think of many different ways to prioritize data, and one may be that it's available, it has mature standards, and it's ready to go. So the issue is, how do we get it to everyone who needs it, versus your other mention of data that is not routinely collected, is not based on standards yet, and you've got an 8-year cycle of getting a standard in place.
Leave out the standards that are really opening up to say we're going to give everybody, somehow the system is going to write down or record in any form stuff that isn't now being recorded. It's a different set of problems and a different set of barriers. So if that's on the table, I'd just like to know.
I'm sorry, Clint, it's Terry again. Can you just repeat that?
The question really is, are we asking the world to say, what would you wish that every clinical system actually currently recorded somewhere? Leave out the machine readable, leave out the communication. Is it a new kind of requirement on the care system which makes it tougher to implement, or is it just that data which is around, we just aren't sending it well? I think you're saying it could be both, but I think we should get that on clear that we're going to be asking additional work of the labor force in healthcare if that's the latter is what's being on the table.
Well, I think it's important.
Go ahead,
Terry.
Well, I was going to say, I think we probably will come up with data classes that are currently not on the draft list. So to the extent that they don't...
I'm talking about draft list. I'm talking about currently not in anybody's system.
Well, part of that, and it may be. I'd say yes, there may be.
All right, we just have to keep the distinction really clear because it's a different burden and effort to get that kind of stuff done.
Yeah, I understand, but I put that in the prioritization category, I think.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, and I'll just add, part of the goal is not to add more requirements, but to create a place where we can better understand what we have and what we don't have to help drive the industry to fill some of the gaps that we have in the available data sets that could make a significant impact. So I think next we have Stephen.
Sure. Thanks.
Yeah, so to Clem's point, I think it's wonderful that we're thinking about not adding additional burden on providers or other clinicians to collect data. But I think that we really need to keep a very broad view of this, that there are going to be other sources of data beyond clinical systems. And I think that there are, you know, we talked earlier today about, you know, some new omics that some of us had never heard about. I mean, there's all the omics, there's all the social determinants, there's all so much of the patient-generated health data, which is nowhere near our clinical systems today, but that will certainly become important as we try to tackle the core data for interoperability more generally. So while I think we have great, you know, physician representation, we have nursing representation, we have, you know, some patient, you know, advocacy here on our group, you know, we don't, as far as I can tell, have, you know, some of the new generation of technology vendors, you know, represented. You know, we've got some public health representation, you know, but we don't have anybody here thinking about things like disaster relief. I think we've got people here who work with standards development organizations, you know, which is great. But I think starting, as you said, with whom might we need to reach out to make sure that we're collecting all the right opinions is a good way to start. You know, we can make that list of stakeholders, patients, caregivers, providers, et cetera, but there may yet be some that we're not even considering given the scope of our own thought.
Yeah, thank you. That's a great comment.
So Christina and Terry, we have just about 5 minutes left of discussion before we have to open it up for public comment.
Okay, so then I guess we'll move down. Leslie, do you want to go ahead?
So thank you. So with the end in mind, when we have these recommendations completed, we'll know how, for the nation, we'll know how new data sets will be considered, what the data sets are, or perhaps the stakeholder benefits and the breadth of use, maybe the availability of data, and the emerging technologies that impact this data set could all be considerations that we have. I'm trying to get to the end in mind is people would know how the process works, how things should be considered, and who would be involved. Is that correct?
Leslie, I'd say that's spot on.
Thank you.
Terry?
Absolutely. We're going to write it down. It'll be the next slide next week.
I do see Adam has his hand up, so I'm going to go ahead and pass it over to Adam.
Sure, thanks. Hi, this is Adam Wong. I'm one of the ONC staffers. I just wanted to add a couple of things just with regard to some points that were presented before. One of them was the availability of the public comments that have come in so far. Those will be released publicly on healthit.gov in about a week or so. And then there was a question about kind of the process of enabling and kind of enacting the USCDI, and it's the Trusted Exchange Framework that is really going to be the lever for doing that. Thank you.
Great. Thanks,
Great.
Adam.
I think we have time for one more probably. Ken, do you want to go ahead?
Sure. Thanks, Ken Kamoto. In terms of stakeholder groups, suggestion for at least 3 stakeholder groups to reach out to where I think their opinions might be really valuable. One would be CMIOs and maybe a group like AMDIS. One would be CIOs and that would be a group like Chime. And one would be EHR vendors for getting an idea of what their customers are asking for. So that would be like EHRA, and Sasha's on the committee, so hopefully she can facilitate that. And in terms of what Clem was saying, I do agree quite a bit with what he was saying about focusing on what's already captured. I do think there are places where it probably makes sense for defining if you're capturing it, how it should be shared, things like social determinants of health, you know, occupational history, et cetera. But I think we still need to be very clear that defining how you should share something if you collect it isn't interpreted as you need to start collecting this, because I think a lot of us on the front lines know that having providers have to do more things now for data collection because of IT standards is one way to get folks really, really upset.
And they'll fight the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Terry. Amen. Okay. All right, did that bring us to our public comment section? And thank you all.
Terry or Christina, any other last final comments?
No, thank you all for joining. I'm excited to work with everybody this coming 8 weeks.
And, Terry? And we may be able to, if there's not a lot of public comment, maybe we can circle back and take the last 5 minutes for more work.
Yes.
To review our homework.
Yes, right. Give you your homework.
We have
operator, can we please open the public line for comments, please?
Absolutely. At this time, we will be conducting the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue, and you may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. Our first question comes from the line of Julie Skeppet of Continent Medical System. Please proceed with your question.
Hello, it's Julia Skaffick from Cognitive Medical Systems. There are a couple points or questions of clarification I'd like to make. One to Clem's comments, and let me know if you can't hear me, by the way. I'm sorry, I'm in the car. It sounded to me from reading the USCDI that the goal of USCDI is to specify exchange data elements, not necessarily those which would be used at the point of care. I think that would be something that'd be useful to clarify. Two, there's multiple levels of specificity of data elements that could be entered into USCDI. When we talk about data classes, that makes me think that the level of specificity is not granular enough. In my mind, it would be more useful to have 20 highly specified diabetes data elements than, say, 5 classes that have loose terminology bindings and not enough specificity to truly be interoperable. In that regard, it sounds like there are two different kinds of data elements that you would potentially have added to your list. One would be highly specified data elements that people want to enter for specific use cases, and two would be a wish list of things that are broader and maybe not yet well specified. I would encourage you to have a process that allows people to bring both to the table. In regards to the stakeholder representation, while this group has excellent stakeholder representation in some areas, I'd encourage the group to develop a process that allows any comer to come with data elements specified at varying levels of specificity and to allow the group to have an evaluation process that says which of these are truly ready for prime time, which should we encourage the further development of, and which should we say, you know, these are wish list things that really need significant investment but are high priority and should be considered of something that the federal government might put additional resources into getting to the point that they're ready for actual use. Thank you.
Hear, hear.
Thank you. And just as a reminder, this is a public comment period, not a question and answer period. So just to clarify the earlier point. Operator, do we have any other public comments?
Yes. Our next question is from the line of Maury Savickas of Chime. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, this is Maury, and Chime would be more than happy to assist this group with shaping their feedback. And number one and number two, I'd like to echo the sentiments concerning use cases, and we think that there's a lot of utility in looking at use cases through that through the lens of DSSI. Thank you.
Thank you. Operator, do we have another comment?
Yes. Our next question comes from the line of Steve Huffnagel of Federal Help. Please proceed with your question.
In response to the discussion on stakeholders,
I believe you can change the semantics and call it stakeholder domains. As an example, dental might be a stakeholder domain, or financial, or logistics. Although what I'm saying is counter to what Kim suggested about CMIOs, CIOs, and vendors, I think an efficient way that you might be able to triage is to use the Federal Health Information Models, which has been developed by the Federal Health Architecture for over 10 years, as a way to go through and look at the stakeholder domains and their maturity very quickly, because I think you could waste a lot of time by not building upon work that's already available. And that model is publicly available at www.fhims.org, and it is a government-sponsored model. Thank you.
Thank you. Operator, do we have another comment?
Yes, our next question is from the line of Jill DeGraff, a private investor. Please proceed with the question.
Hello, just let me know if you hear me.
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, great. Well, thank you very much for this opportunity to comment. You know, I wanted to just provide an echo to a comment earlier about the value of use cases, but also provide some perspective from research that I did for the Commonwealth Fund over the summer. They were looking at what are the business model challenges for why consumer-enabled IT is not being adopted more readily. And some of the thoughts that were coming up and were really about the need for a pull. You need to have a pull in the marketplace that's demanding the data, because when people are pulling for it, they will, you know, there'll be the impetus, and that might drive the use cases that you are looking for to promote trusted exchange over the HINs. And a recurring theme that came up as payers and providers were interviewed and drug manufacturers was the need to consider the consumer's journey. And it's a concept that comes up a lot in data, in consumer digital data and marketing. And, you know, it's a mindset that is very foreign to the mindset that we often adopt when we're looking at electronic health information, because we're presuming that it is only data that resides inside health information records and is being used by providers. Not to discount that at all, but if you are looking at trying to unlock longitudinal data and you want to engage a consumer who may be a woman who's in the sandwich generation managing their adult parents or their aging parents and their children and their own health, then, you know, a lot of your use cases have to be thought through strategically through the lens of what data is accessible, what data is desirable, and how can you activate that individual. So I don't have an answer so much as just a request to maybe think about you know, these other kind of ways of approaching the problem by thinking about a journey that a person is undertaking involving their health and where these various data elements can be useful to support that journey. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Operator, I believe we maybe have time for one more.
At this time, we have no further questions over the audio portion of the conference.
Okay. Terry or Christina, any other final comments?
Homework is in the mail. So we'll send out something to you guys and ask you to have it back in by, when did we decide? We decided Sunday
close
night.
Close of business Monday.
Well, could we bring up what's going to coming up next on the call? I mean, we could use some time to hear that.
Sure. What's coming up next call is going to be to take the feedback you all are going to provide in stakeholder lists
and we'll do all our homework, and we will sort of pound out a list that makes sense to us. And also in the homework, think about criteria to use for prioritizing data classes.
That's what you want early next week.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, just a reminder to everyone, the next USCDI Task Force meeting is next week on the 28th at 3:30 Eastern Time. If there are no other last-minute questions or comments.
Just a final comment from Stephen Lane that we mentioned earlier today that we should probably look at whether there are any opportunities to collaborate with the NCVHS work that they're doing on their predictability roadmap, because I think that's going to be an important thing for us to consider is how to make the output of our committee predictable for the industry.
Great.
Thank you, Stephen, for that reminder. Okay, and with that, I think we can adjourn for today, and we hope to hear from you all next week.
Have a great day.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.